The deadline to register to vote in Indiana is Tuesday. Early voting begins Wednesday. I'm Dave Crooks from the DLC Media News Center. On this weekend's Focus on the Community, we continue to shine a spotlight on important political races in West Central Indiana. Alan Morrison is the Republican incumbent as state representative in District 42 from Clay County. He is being challenged by Mark Spellbring of Park County. Today, we will learn more about Alan and his position on many of today's issues facing the Hoosier State. Good morning, Representative Morrison.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Not bad. Yourself?
Oh, I'm wonderful. It's a beautiful day.
It is.
I'm glad fall is finally starting to come.
Me too. It's perfect Hoosier fall weather, and good to see you earlier this week in Park County at the Meet Your Candidate event that the Chamber put on, and appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to our listeners as, Election Day is fast approaching. So
it's just about a month away.
It is indeed. Yeah. So let me ask you this. First of all, for those that don't know much about you, give us a brief bio, what you do for a living outside the legislature, and kind of your background, I guess, to be a state rep in this area.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the proud father of two Northview Knights. My daughter, Katie, is a senior, and my son, Derek, is a freshman. So needless to say, I spent a lot of time going to their events, everything from cross country, track, baseball, basketball, choir, you name it. So it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch them grow up. And it's a great high school. It's a great school system. I've been a state rep here for District 42 for 10 years. I did not have probably what you would call a natural progression to being a state rep. I was a sport management major in college. I worked in professional sport for a handful of years, and then I worked at Rose Holman and helping to run the athletic department or athletic facilities and recreational facilities. And I got to a point where I was watching what was happening, and I was just one of those guys that was tired at yelling at the TV and being frustrated. So I said, heck with it, I'm going to go ahead and run.
So if I remember, you replaced Dale Grubb. That was an open seat then. Is that right?
Correct. So I ran first in 2010, and I lost to Representative Kersey.
Oh, okay.
By just a couple 300 votes.
I remember that.
And
now.
Then we got then the redistricting occurred, and I moved into that northern district. Dale decided not to run, and it was an open seat. And I beat Mark by, I think, 106 votes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And then he ran again another term.
He ran again two years later.
And now he's back again.
That's so right, yeah.
Now, your employer, we got so many people in the legislature that do so many different things. What do you do for a living besides the legislature?
Yeah, I work for a group called MOHOPS Security Systems. And so we do everything from home security to fire detection, commercial fire, commercial intrusion. We do cameras, CCTV. We do access control. We do monitoring. So, we'll be everywhere from somebody's home to a smaller company to large schools and big industry and heavy industry. So we're a little bit of everything.
Okay, very good. Now, yeah. We mentioned the district lines do change usually every 10 years when the census comes out. What's different about District 42 this election cycle versus the last one?
Yeah, so I kind of picked up everything in Park County and Clay that Representative Bo Baird had. So I still have District 42 is still all of Vermilion County. Used to have a little bit of Warren County. Don't have that anymore. Now have a couple townships south of Covington and Fountain County. But now it's all of Park County, basically the upper half of Clay County, and then pretty much the same part of Vigo County. So it's parts of two counties and parts of three others.
Okay. You touched on this during the chamber event in Park County earlier this week, and me being one that used to chair utilities when I served in the legislature, you kind of caught my attention on this Wabash Valley Resources. Help people that live around the area understand what this project is all about in northern Vigo County, because I'm still trying to process all this interesting new technology that apparently is coming to the valley.
It's exciting. It's very exciting. So what Wabash Valley Resources is for the folks who recall, there used to be a Duke Energy plant up there. They tore down the coal fire part of it, but the combined cycle part was still there. A group came in, purchased it, and said, we're going to turn this into a factory that will take biomass, create ammonia, create hydrogen, capture the CO2, put the CO2 into the ground, And so it's a really amazing, amazing process. So the carbon sequestration part of it is the part that we had to work with throughout the legislative process. And that's been an incentivized since the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now Biden administration. And so by taking that CO2 and not allowing it to get into the atmosphere, they'll pump it about 7,000 to 10,000 feet below the ground. So it is certainly environmentally friendly then. And then the ammonia part of it, it's going to create about 2/3 of enough ammonia fertilizer for the state of Indiana. And for the farmers out there, they obviously know that their ammonia costs have tripled over the last handful of years. So it's certainly farmer friendly as well. And then the hydrogen part of it, go ahead and Google the hydrogen economy and you'll be amazed to see what is coming. And we are on the forefront of that here in the Wabash Valley. And hydrogen is certainly going to be one of the major ways that we power vehicles and many other things moving forward.
So they'll make ammonia at this site plus capture carbon and put it in the ground, huh?
Yep. And so the molecules that come out, and I am certainly not a chemist, but they can separate what is the output of burning that biomass, and they'll capture it, and part of it will be the ammonia, and then part of it will be the hydrogen. And so they'll have two products that are viable to use, to sell, and are very useful to folks.
And so did we have to change a statute or anything to make this happen, or what kind of moved through the process, I guess, from a legislative standpoint?
Yeah, so the carbon sequestration part of it we had to put into code. And so when we first did this in 2019, it was basically just as a pilot project. It was the first one that we've done here in the state of Indiana. And so this project specifically is outlined in the code. This past year, Chairman Soliday from Valparaiso, he had a bill for carbon sequestration, which is a little bit more universal for the state as well. So we're taking these steps as we move forward to recognize that this is something that is coming. Part of the infrastructure bill that the Biden administration passed this past year was hydrogen hubs that will be placed throughout the country. And, with us producing hydrogen here in the Wabash Valley Resources, and there will be a couple other places up in Northwest Indiana, I could really see that one of those hubs being somewhere in this region. And that's what we would love to see.
Wow. So this is a significant project. What are we projecting when it comes to, let's say, construction jobs to start with?
Sure. About 600 to 800 construction jobs for 24 to 30 months.
Holy cow.
Yep. And then full-time jobs, about 125 to 150 at an average salary of $75,000.
Nice.
And so the money involved in this project is it's a $800 to $1 billion project. It's something that we don't see come to West Central Indiana every day. And so it's very important that that we continue to work with them as a legislature, make sure that everything is that they have from us as a government that they need. Obviously, they have a lot of regulations that they got to follow. And actually, I was just speaking with them the other day, and they got word back from the EPA that their level 6 permit, which is the highest level you can go, it costs tens of millions of dollars to even apply for it.
Right.
It takes about 4 years to go through the process. They're in so they started in 2019, all of 2019, 20, 21, 22 now. They finally got back their reply. They have a couple questions that they have to answer, and they'll be good to go to move forward there. So it's been a long process, and they are the regulations that they have, the environmental steps that are taken through this are extremely stringent. So I feel good that what they're doing environmentally over there is certainly on the up and up.
So when will this be shovel ready, do you think?
Well, I'd like to think by in the first quarter of next year.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's exciting. And so nothing else you have to do legislatively at this point to make this happen, I guess, once the permit's approved, the way they go then, right?
There's a couple other things. Yeah. For on the federal level, they'll be happy. There's a couple other things we have to look at here this upcoming session that has to do with some property rights issues, and not on top of the ground, but below the ground.
So it's my understanding Indiana Farm Bureau is against this. Why?
That's a great question. A lot of their claim has to do with underground trespass, and so with the movement of the substance underground. And now it can be tracked. There's modeling that will show where the CO2 will move and be. There will be monitoring wells all around. There's sometimes just problems in communication, I think. And we need to communicate that better with them. There's also, and the group right now, they're, we'll continue to work with leadership on both sides. To make sure that all the legislators involved, truly understand what is at play here. But I think we're going to be fine. The project will be fine, and we'll move forward.
Do they see this as like a mineral rights kind of issue, or like if a gas line was going through or something, or what?
I've heard all of those. Yeah.
Okay.
And there will be a line that goes from the plant to where the well is. And we addressed all of that in the original legislation as well with landowners on under that respect, and so we've addressed everything that needs to be, and we just sometimes new things are maybe a little startling to some folks, and that's what we're dealing with the Farm Bureau, but I think we'll be okay, and this project is if you want to talk about maybe one of the most farmer friendly projects that we could possibly dream up and have happen here in West Central Indiana. This is it again with the cost of ammonia and how this will impact the bottom line for farmers in a very, very positive way.
And by the way, where is Wabash Valley Resources? I mean, the people funding this, where are they out of? Any idea?
Well, there's the obviously the plant itself is their home base, which is over there on Wabash in West Terre Haute. So there are investors from the federal government is a major investor.
Okay,
the Department of Energy has invested about $75 million. There's another $175 to $200 million out there that they're certainly in line for. There are private investors as well, and some other businesses that have certainly said that they want to be a part of it and have. So,
okay,
it is a big deal, and there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of people that are working to get it done.
We're talking with State Representative Alan Morrison on this weekend's Focus on the Community. Let's go back to earlier this summer. As soon as the Supreme Court overturned the Roe versus Wade decision on the Dobbs decision, Indiana was the first state to pass legislation to restrict or reduce abortion. Tell us a little bit more about the law that was actually passed and what changes it makes and where you stand on it.
Yeah, so we were the first legislature to come in and take steps. I know that there were a handful of states that had trigger laws. And as soon as the decision on the federal level went through, they were triggered into action. So, it was a long discussion and kind of ended up where I figured it would, when talking about abortion and what we had in Indiana prior, there was a cap at it was 15 weeks, I do believe. So what we ended up with was a ban on abortion except for rape, incest, life of the mother, and fatal fetal anomalies. Dave, it was one of those things. If you and I are discussing how we're going to go about changing TIF districts or whether they're a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. You could probably change my mind from A to B. And I wouldn't mind you trying to do it. With this, where everybody was and what people's opinions were on it, I never asked anybody to change their mind. I never asked anybody to explain where they were. And everybody was really very respectful about that both ways. It's a moral issue, and I understand that there are other issues that are ancillary and directly related to it. But when we're talking about the abortion issue itself, just right, I mean, that issue on the focused in only on that. I mean, it's something that I don't think that is it's debatable. You can debate everything, but it's hard to change somebody's moral compass, and if you can understand what I'm trying to say there.
Sure.
So, you know, where I was, I mean, I choose life, and we had 8,400 abortions in this state last year. The changes that we made to the law will probably save about 8,200 babies, and I believe that's worthwhile.
So do you have any concerns? I know that IU Med, as soon as the bill was passed, along with Eli Lilly, were coming out with concerns that, hey, this may be too far, too stringent perhaps. And then one of IU Med's concern was if doctors have to worry about lawsuits and maybe even going to jail if they perform what they believe is a life-saving procedure, but someone challenges them on the decision to conduct an abortion or a DNC that maybe is just, in their opinion, is necessary. I mean, do you feel like maybe it could have went too far and perhaps an adjustment might be needed in the next session or not?
Well, we did make those issues were at the top of our mind as well, especially with the physicians and, you know, we certainly, there were people that wanted to have, criminal charges for doctors or for mothers. And that was something that was never actually really contemplated. And so that's not a part of what we're doing. Now, you know, and the corporations chiming in, the Lillies and Cummins and GEs of the world, everybody can have their own opinion on anything, you know, but I think that we've gone a little too far with corporations speaking for all of their employees and believe that they have some sort of bully pulpit because of they've got CEO after their name and some big company. They should hold no more power over what we do as a legislature than any singular voter. And that's, and that means that they have the right to vote us in or vote us out. But, as companies, standing there and trying to sway legislation, I think is a very dangerous thing. And it's not a good thing.
Let's talk about the gas tax. I know a lot of people still don't clearly understand how that works in our state. And I notice in the Southwest pocket, especially around Evansville, you'll see that a lot of times, especially when gas spiked to $5 and across the state line, you know, Kentucky's saving you 35 or 40 cents because they don't charge that 7% sales tax on top of the actual gas tax itself. And here we're flush with money this past summer after we got the help from the federal government, let alone Indiana being pretty good stewards, I think, with our state dollars. Was there serious consideration in your caucus to maybe either pausing the gas tax during the spike that we've seen in the past year or two, or even eliminating it? Or was that even a serious debate in your caucus?
No, it was not a serious debate, and it was not considered. There are, without a doubt, there were people that had that thought and that opinion that maybe that would be the best way to go. But now I'm gonna preface this with, I understand the sales tax and the gas tax, and I can talk about why and how important it is. There are some intricacies in there that I would need our new Ways and Means Chair Jeff Thompson to hit every single one for me. But there are just a couple things. You know, a few years ago, when we passed the increase in gas tax for the infrastructure, and we put $25 billion into infrastructure over the next 20 years or so, those numbers are right about where they should be, I believe. I think I'm correct on those. I voted for that, and it was probably one of two tax increases or taxes that I voted for. The other being the food and beverage in Terre Haute for the convention center. But I voted for that. And the reason being is, you know, infrastructure is so important. And the money that goes into the infrastructure from that tax increase, obviously, roads, bridges, and it does get back down to the local level. But right now, all those, the asphalt and all the other supplies that it takes to maintain those roads and build those roads is getting more expensive as well. And so I understand it's a circle that never stops. I just actually looked at my bills this past month, and I spent $680 on gas this past month. I travel a lot for work. I travel back and forth to Indy.
Yep.
I almost spent $700 just on gas. So I get it. All of us want to have our gas be cheaper, but we also need to have roads that are safe. So
I'm with you, and I still think that's something that over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, and I can use I-70 as an example, man, it just seems like we're slipping a little bit when it comes to our roads.
Yeah, so, well, you know, our state roads have gotten a lot of attention here over the last handful of years, and it's because of that money that has been put in. You know, there's going to be roads that are good some places and bad others. Dave, I got a great example. It's funny, as a couple years ago, I was down in Corey, and you know, a Saturday morning, little Cracker Barrel, and we were talking about roads, and a woman there, she was very upset about how bad the roads are, and you know, why don't we do anything? And I tried to tell her, you know, we're putting a lot of money into it because of you. I can look at that gas tax as a user fee, right? You know, you're using the road, you're paying to make it better. Probably about 2 minutes later, maybe the other woman, another woman wasn't paying attention to that conversation. She said, "I am so sick and tired of all these barrels and cones everywhere. I can't get anywhere. This road is closed. That road." And I said, "All right." I said, "I want you two to talk, because we got to be able to figure this out. If the roads are bad, but there's too much construction, and you know, so it was funny, and it was really,
yeah, it happened. It can be an inconvenience, especially in the summer. But I want to see those cones. I want to see those roads absolutely fixed. So
well, I'll throw this out there too. On I-70, we need a third lane, obviously, from here to Plainfield. And I drive down I-65 to Louisville, and I see them putting in third lane, you know, in certain areas there. And you know, if you're driving from Dayton over to Columbus, Ohio, it's three lane almost the whole way. And I mean, it's just a safety thing. The trucks and the truck traffic on I-70 from here to Indianapolis and all around. But I mean, that's where most of us drive back and forth.
Right.
I mean, you could go 20 vehicles in a row and maybe only see two or three passenger vehicles.
Absolutely. And can you imagine if the opponents to I-69 had gotten their way and had merged that with I-70 and US 41?
Oh, jeez.
You might need four or five lanes each direction. Yeah. But yep. So thank goodness that didn't happen. And I have to still tip my hat to Mitch Daniels. I didn't support major moves at the time, but as I look back when I served, I probably should have voted for that, just because, you know, the people in my district aren't paying those tolls in northern Indiana. And I remember the late Jackie Walorski, you know, she didn't really want to vote for that. I probably should have traded her votes on that one, because that was not good for her at the time. And bless her, we sure hated to see her pass too young with the recent accident in August. But we've only got a couple of minutes left. There's one quick issue I want to just ask you about, even though it's not the biggest issue, but it just seems like Indiana's starting to be an island when it comes to either medical cannabis or just recreational cannabis. I noticed when I was in Michigan a couple of months ago, they're selling it legally as a recreational item along with Illinois. And I even heard a report that Illinois got more proceeds last year off of cannabis than they did liquor tax. You see Indiana, especially under the current supermajority, ever embracing either medical cannabis or even recreational cannabis?
There's certainly a strong push within a good portion of the legislature. And as you know, and a lot of folks who follow, the governor is important, and so is leadership in both bodies, all four bodies. And when I say all four bodies, for everybody out there, I mean the Republicans and Democrats in both the House and Senate.
Right.
I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. I you know, everything seems to move forward at a pace, and that pace is different in different states. I mean, 10 years from now, I doubt that we'll be where we are today. How about that?
Okay. I mean, when I saw Alabama embrace medical cannabis, I'm like, wow, that's Alabama did that? Really? I mean, so I just see that that could be a revenue stream. And obviously, I don't put cannabis in the same category as, you know, drugs like meth and things like that. But I just noticed that with so many states embracing it, it just seems like it's bound to happen here eventually, you know, so. Kind of like Sunday alcohol sales, you know?
Yep. And I voted for that. And I, you know, it's funny. I there were some people that were very upset with me, others that were mad or happy about it, really kind of agnostic. We were told it was going to shut down the small package liquor stores, but it hasn't.
And by the way, I have to share this with you. I filed that two or three times, the noon to eight opportunity on Sundays to buy alcohol. And I couldn't get it passed when I was there, but they obviously embraced that language later, because my argument back then was, hey, if you do run a small package store, that's just one person for one shift on an 8-hour day.
That's right.
And so that would be fair versus all the box stores selling it all day long on a Sunday. And it seems like that's what was finally embraced. So, you know, sometimes things that you try to file and happen doesn't always happen immediately, but maybe, or the old saying, you know, the really good bills take forever to pass, but the really bad bills fly right through.
Yep.
Hey, you got a minute or two left. Why should people reelect you to the General Assembly?
Well, I appreciate the question. I've worked real hard over the years, Dave, to do a couple things. One was, and I touched on it in Park County, the constituent relations, I think, are so important. I've worked with a lot of people on a lot of different issues, everything from their property tax to issues with drainage from you know, the state road to issues with children and elderly so you know, I really do think that that's important. That's one of the most important things that we do as elected officials, is give that attention and help to our constituents when need be, because heck, even for us up there, it's hard to navigate all the different departments and the bureaucracy, even as a legislator sometimes, let alone you feel probably just completely lost sometimes when you feel that you don't have that access and you don't know where to go. So, you know, I've really worked on that. And second of all, I think I represent this area very well with the ideologically and politically. I'm a conservative, I'm fiscally conservative. But I also think I have common sense and can see that, you know, when we need to move forward, sometimes everything is not along party lines, and we just need to make sure we get something done. And I have no problem working with folks on the other side of the aisle, and I've done it with a lot of different projects across that divide on things that need to be done. So I'll continue to work hard, and I certainly am humbled by the opportunity I've had over the last 10 years, and I look forward to a couple more.
Okay. Representative Alan Morrison of Brazil, the District 42 state representative, good luck to you and safe travels. I guess you're heading to the state capitol today as we record this on Thursday for an exciting summer study committee meeting, I guess.
Yes, the annual report from the IURC.
So. That's a real yawner, I know. I've been in that committee meeting for a number of years. So, well, best to you, Alan, and good luck to you, and we'll talk again.
Thank you, Dave.
This has been Focus on the Community, produced by the DLC Media News Center. This program is broadcast Saturday mornings at 6 on 104.9 WAXI, 7 a.m. on WAMB, AM 1130, 106.9 and 99.5, Sundays at 6 a.m. on 105.5 WVIG, and 7 a.m. on Sundays on 92.7 WFMB. For a download of this show and other past programs, visit any one of our radio station websites. I'm Dave Crooks. Thanks for listening.